Why do you like trains?
Because a pool cars. Great job, buddy.
That is the tow-headed 2.5-year-old who lives at my house. Like so many kids, he has this unexplained passion for trains. Not a child known for his attention span, but he will link together his wooden tracks, scooch boxcars and engines over them for hours. While in his car seat, it's a thrill every time we drive under some train tracks near our house. Have you ever been on a train?
Yeah, airport. I've been on a train airport.
You rode on a train at an airport, at the Denver airport, that's right. I guess it's my fault that we had to lie to the boy and make him believe an airport tram was an honest-to-goodness locomotive. But after reporting on the lack of passenger trains in Middle Tennessee, I'm cutting myself some slack. From Nashville Public Radio, this is Curious Nashville. I'm Blake Farmer, and we are investigating how this city got dropped from the country's passenger rail system. We'll hop aboard the fabled Floridian, follow Al Gore onto the train, and find out what it would take to get service back.
Hello?
Hello, is this Sharon Lorenz?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Sharon is a retired teacher. She's one of several listeners who asked us about Amtrak and passenger rail service in general. They're right to be curious. Nashville is one of the largest cities in the country without a train connection.
Both my husband and I grew up where there were trains. He grew up near Chicago, so he was able to take trains into Chicago. And I grew up near Newark, Delaware. So it wasn't unusual for me and friends, even in high school, to take a train like to Washington. And we would go to the National Gallery of Art there or go to New York, and it was easy. So when I wanted to look years ago to see if we could travel, now we're in our late 60s and live in Gallatin, the train just wasn't accessible.
So you like traveling by train. Why?
Well, I'm not, you know, it's not really wonderful. You know, it's kind of noisy and smelly and slow.
Smelly, slow, not to mention it could be quicker to drive or even take a bus, and it might be cheaper to fly. There is an element of nostalgia, but Sharon says it's also not having to deal with airport security and being dropped off in the middle of town, since that's usually where train stations are.
It's easy to get to the, you know, to the depot and to get off. Usually where you get off is in a city center. Like in Washington, it was Union Station. You just got off and walk.
To be clear, there is a train that drops people off in the middle of downtown Nashville, but the farthest they're coming from is Lebanon. We are not talking about rush hour commuter trains like the Music City Star. We're talking about the trains with dining cars and sleeper stalls that used to pick up passengers about a half mile up Broadway at Nashville's Union Station. If you've never been inside, do yourself a favor. The place is spectacular, now a swanky hotel, and there are all kinds of relics pointing to its past as a bustling train hub. An old schedule is chalked up on the wall behind the concierge desk.
The trains that came through here had names like the Dixie Landler, the Dixie Flyer, the Dixie Limited, a lot of Dixie.
Those names go way back to when this place was hopping, everyone dressed in their Sunday best, crisscrossing the marble floor on their way to board any number of trains. The train shed, which has now been torn down, was once the largest structure of its kind in the country, a modern engineering marvel. But by 1970, private railroads were bailing on passenger service. That's when the government took over with an agency called Amtrak. The one train line through Nashville that survived was the Floridian, a 1,400-mile route from Chicago to Miami. Terry Bebaud, who happens to run the Music City Star for a living now, rode the Floridian as a young man and has fond memories.
Getting there was half the fun and getting back was the other half, you know, and being there was the middle part. It was just part of the vacation.
An old brochure we found says, "We'll be rolling through America's heartland to America's sunland." It advertises the dome coaches with a 360-degree view and a dining car with full-course meals. But I talked to Union Station's unofficial historian, Glenn Pearson. He says catching the train was a little less glitzy. Guests will frequently mention their recollections of the place in its latter days as a train station.
There was a gentleman a few months ago He said, I passed through here as a kid. I said, it must have been really grand. He said, no, it was nasty.
The railroad had let facilities just deteriorate.
This is Roy Neal, born and raised in Smyrna. Then he went to work in Washington as a Democratic Party operative. Along the way, he did a tour of duty on the board of Amtrak. From his account, by the time Amtrak took over in 1970, the Floridian never really had a chance.
In Union Station in Nashville, there was only one passenger train going south and one going north every day. So there wasn't much of a facility left. The building was still there, but it was beginning to decay substantially. The old shed in the back where the passenger trains pulled in, there were holes in the ceiling and, you know, birds flying all around.
So the facilities were in rough shape. Amtrak, which was still just a few years old, was already hemorrhaging money. President Jimmy Carter proposed cutting several cross-country lines, including the Floridian. The South was going to be hardest hit. In steps future Vice President Al Gore, then a Tennessee congressman, vowing to fight. At this point, Roy was his chief of staff.
Well, Al Gore had become probably the foremost advocate for passenger trains in the United States Congress.
Roy says they shared an appreciation for rail travel.
There's something about moving along and looking out that window, eating in a dining car, maybe sleeping on the train and waking up, looking out the window and you see a whole new town and watching the countryside go by. It's magical.
Al Gore helped keep the Floridian on life support for months. In Congress, he argued that the train would regain popularity as gas prices surged. States and local governments that were getting cut out started filing lawsuits. For a while, federal courts delayed those cuts, but then the U.S. Supreme Court weighed in and said yes, Amtrak could move forward. And so, as a final act, Al Gore decided he had to take that last train out of Nashville. It was October 8th. 1979. Reporters who chronicled those final days described how cars were in disrepair, even little stuff like bar stools where the upholstery fabric was patched with duct tape. And yes, you had Al Gore aboard, but not many others. A newspaper account by longtime Nashville journalist Gene Polosinski said one coach car was completely empty and another half-filled.
The dateline is aboard the Floridian.
Yes, I rode the train from Chicago to Miami, I believe.
All right, and it says the last Floridian groaned out of Chicago's Union Station at 9:30 p.m. Sunday, right on time. Amtrak's timetable said it was headed for Miami, but people aboard knew better. It was headed for the grave.
Ooh, did I write that? Goodness.
Yes, you did. And you go on to sort of catalog, you know, the loss per mile, which was 13.5 cents a mile per passenger, meaning it was basically getting a $120 to $150 subsidy per passenger. It was the biggest money loser for Amtrak at the time, $6.2 million in 1978.
You had the rail enthusiast at the time saying, just you wait, Amtrak will see the error of its ways. The Floridian will be back in a year or two. But Polosinski says that was not the general mood.
The whole trip had a very heavy sense of, you know, this is it. It's going away and it's not going to come back.
So Amtrak chugged out of Union Station in 1979 with a whimper. No big loss for most people. But there has been talk from time to time about a revival. Would you mind introducing yourself for me?
My name is Mark Magliari. I'm the Chicago-based spokesman for Amtrak.
Magliari says even before the Floridian took its last trip south, the tracks were in rough shape. So rough that the passenger trains were having to go like 40 miles an hour, half the allowable speed. And even if we think folks have this innate love of trains, low speed is a big problem.
If the train is remarkably slower than driving, people will drive.
You're saying that the track condition prevented you all from even going as fast as you're allowed to go?
Well, sure, because the track conditions were deteriorating, and as track conditions deteriorate for safety reasons, both the freight and passenger trains are slowed down.
If Amtrak was going to rev back up in Middle Tennessee, those rails would need some attention. But Magliari says other high-dollar upgrades would be needed, too.
For example, the railroad crossings that are electronically triggered might be configured for slower speed freight trains, but aren't configured for higher speed passenger trains. So each one of those crossings either has to be re-engineered or needs to be made smart enough to know the difference between a passenger train going 79 miles an hour, for example, and a freight train which would go over it at 60.
People who have this idea of bringing back rail service, what would you say to them on the street?
Well, it's not easy, but it's possible. I would say that there's a process for it.
That process, Magliari tells me, is one that would have to start at the state level. To avoid Amtrak sinking back into a financial hole, states are now responsible for any startup cost that might be needed for a new line. And if there aren't enough passengers to pay for the operating costs, states have to cover that too. In other words, reviving the Floridian would start with someone like Liza Jofrian. She oversees multimodal transportation for Tennessee. To her, Amtrak in Nashville is like ancient history.
I don't even know when did Nashville last have Amtrak service.
Oh, yeah. Well, so what I've learned. Do you want me to go through what I've learned?
Yeah.
All right, so
I remind her about the Floridian and how Amtrak was in a bad financial spot and how President Carter was trying to stabilize the agency, even that Al Gore tried to save the day but couldn't. Jofrian takes this all in, and she explains that the state has done some looking at what it would take to get another train going, not north and south, but east and west to Memphis. That would be the quickest link to Amtrak's existing map, since a train does run through Memphis.
So these figures are 5 years old, but the cost of providing service that went up to 125 miles an hour would be somewhere around $1.8 billion.
So just kind of a non-starter at the
moment.
That's
a huge amount of money, right? I think if you asked Nashvillians or the folks in Memphis, if we're going to spend $1.8 billion, how would you like to spend it? Amtrak service is not likely to be their first priority.
You know, you're a person who has a... and rightly so, a train calendar on your wall and sort of train thing. I mean, imagine you think trains are interesting. You have a train mug over here on your shelf. What do you say to people who do think, why aren't we headed this way?
I think with passenger rail, the densities in this area are difficult to support. It's much more effective in the Northeast, say, or even the route that Virginia supports. I'm a supporter of passenger rail. I would love to see passenger rail, but I just think we need to be realistic in looking at the costs and the use of the system in relation to our other priorities.
I'll translate. Don't hold your breath. I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but I did have to run this all by our question asker, Sharon Lorenz, and now she, too, is resigned to the likelihood that Nashville will not have a train to hop on anytime soon.
It's just not going to.
Yeah, sounds pretty definitive, huh?
It does, but there's a nice nostalgia, and the depot is there, or the train station is there right in the middle of Nashville, and I guess that's it. You know, you can still hear the sound of trains, but they're freight trains.
Sharon, I think that your trip that you're dreaming of, you may just have to plan a road trip.
I think so, too. We'll just take back roads. How about that? That'll be a nice, slow way to get somewhere.
Curious Nashville is produced by Nashville Public Radio. This episode, edited by Emily Siner, Mac Linebaugh, and Anita Bug. Thanks to all our listeners who keep sending questions our way. Keep them coming. You can ask us questions, see what we've already answered, and vote on what we should investigate next at curious.wpln.org. You can also check out our other podcasts. Neighbors is a show about what connects us, and Movers and Thinkers brings together some of the most interesting people in the city. The latest episode features creators like poet T.J. Jarrett.
That image has meaning for me, but it also has meaning for my reader, and I don't need to get in the way. You stop owning it. The moment it goes out in the world, it's not yours anymore, and that's the hardest lesson of all.
Find Movers and Thinkers anywhere you listen to podcasts. Music for this episode came from Poddington Bear, Yacht, K.L. Sealegs, and Lee Rosever. I'm Blake Farmer, and this is Nashville Public Radio.